Hey, Mason, I really need a good gift for my generic loved one. Any ideas?
Oh, yeah, Andrew. I have the gift they need. If you sign up for GoDaddy's Economy Blogcast package, you'll receive 1 gig of disk space, 100 gigs bandwidth, recording tools, and much more.
Whoa, with all those features, I'd guess that kind of package will run me at least $20 a month and be plastered with ads.
You're wrong, Andrew. The Blogcast Economy package is just $4.49 a month for 12 months.
That's a deal, and a perfect way to get your own website, blog, or podcast started.
Ooh, yeah, that is a deal. Plus, enter code MUGGLE when you check out. Save an additional 10% on any order. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com.
Because Bellatrix doesn't get any, this is MuggleCast episode 121 for November 25th, 2007. So, Andy, how was your Thanksgiving?
Oh, it was great. Celebrated it well.
Yeah. Did you have turkey?
Lots of.
Micah thinks like this is his greatest joke ever because he keeps running with it. He's not going
to
stop.
I've got to think of a witty answer for it. That's the problem.
Yeah. It was pretty chicken.
Hey, Micah, how is your Christmas? No, sorry.
Well, Eric, considering it's a month away.
I had a turkey of a Thanksgiving.
No. We had a Black Friday because they don't have Thanksgiving. They don't really have Black Friday, but it was a busy day nonetheless, and it really got me in the spirit. I'm ready. I need stuffing, guys. I really need stuffing.
Yes. I had stuffing. It was very good. I also went Black Friday shopping. The Cherry Hill Mall. You ever been there, Eric? The Cherry Hill Mall?
Cherry Hill, yeah. The Cherry Hill Complex. There's an IMAX there, isn't it?
I don't know that.
Ah, just one.
That's like the first time I've been there. But actually, I did go there with Jamie. I actually took Jamie to that mall. He loved it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, they don't really have malls in the UK.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so I went Black Friday shopping. And no Order of the Phoenix DVD because it's not on sale here yet.
Oh, gee, we haven't. I bought it. I got all my Christmas shopping done on Friday.
Anyway, welcome everyone to the show. As you see, we have Micah, Eric, Andy's back as well. And I'm here. I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Eric Skull.
I'm Micah Tannenbaum.
And I'm Andy McCray.
Mike is over in the MuggleCast News Center with the past week's top Harry Potter news stories.
All right, thanks, Andrew. Universal's Harry Potter theme park, set to open in late 2009 or early 2010, will focus heavily on holiday-themed events, particularly at Halloween and Christmas time, according to Jim Hill Media. It is hoped that this Holidays at Hogwarts idea will rival Disney World's current dominance during the holiday season. Promotion for the park is due to begin as early as next year with television commercials featuring clips from all five of the Potter movies to date. With the release of the Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix DVD in the US less than a month away, Warner Brothers has released a new behind-the-scenes video which features actors Dan Radcliffe and Ivana Lynch and shows how special effects were used to create the flying thestral sequence in the movie. Harry Potter author J.K. Rowling has been named Entertainment Weekly's Entertainer of the Year. The announcement was made on the Today Show, which you can see video of on MuggleNet.com. Rowling, who appears on the cover, is the first author to ever receive the award. Finally, Sir Ian McKellen was recently interviewed by The Guardian, where amongst other things he discussed Dumbledore versus Gandalf, the character who he played in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. McKellen says that while he and Michael Gambon are close friends, the topic of how to play a wizard has never come up. And as far as if he would have taken over the role of Dumbledore from the late Richard Harris, McKellen had this to say. People say to me, don't you wish you'd played Dumbledore? I say no. I played Gandalf, the original. There was a question as to whether I might take over from Richard Harris, but seeing as one of the last things he did publicly was say what a dreadful actor he thought I was, it would not have been appropriate for me to take over his part. He smiles icily, saying, it would have been unfair. When asked who would win the battle between Dumbledore and Gandalf, McKellen never hesitated. Gandalf, of course. That's all the news for this November 25th, 2007 edition of MuggleCast. Back to the show.
Okay, thank you, Micah.
You're welcome.
You know, it was a slow week.
It was a slow week.
The newsmakers are off this week, too, with the rest of us.
The newsmakers?
Yes. Besides the big Thanksgiving, the annual Thanksgiving post, we had a little update on the Harry Potter theme park. Finally, I mean, we haven't heard about it in a while. And this comes from a theme park blog. It's sort of an entertainment industry blog, but they focus on theme parks. They got some connections in the theme parks. And let me read part of the recent blog post here. It concerns holidays at Hogwarts, this concept. You see, Universal is hoping to turn Island of Adventure's Harry Potter themed section into a way to challenge Disney World's dominance when it comes to Christmas in Central Florida. Picture, if you will, a yearly Holidays at Hogwarts promotion at Universal Studios Islands of Adventure, with carolers strolling through the streets of Hogsmeade and a traditional English Christmas feast being served nightly in the Great Hall at Hogwarts Castle. End quote. Is that a great idea or what? Holidays
maybe.
At Hogwarts. Now,
yeah.
Here's the thing. This blog post also said this might be opening by 2009. So they're going to... And this blogger said they will open the park when it's half finished. Just, I guess, start getting people in early. Now, is this a good idea? Or shouldn't you wait a couple extra years for the whole theme park to be open?
Well, why would you do that? If you can make all these sorts of sales on memorabilia and all the stuff you can have prepped and ready to go.
I guess, but I would just want like a huge grand opening instead of it just opening in pieces. But this is a very good way to get those Disney fans out of Universal. Because personally, who pays for two parks? I mean, you know... So I think it's going to hurt Disney's holiday popularity. Maybe not much, but I'm sure there are several listeners out there who go to Disney for the holidays, or you know, every once in a while. And I think most of our listeners will definitely start turning to Universal Studios. Have any of you guys been to Universal Studios
in Florida? Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, I've never.
It's
been
a while.
I'm a Disney fan.
I didn't go to Islands of Adventure at the time, so I cannot speak for it. They had a cool Spider-Man ride my friend told me I had to ride before the movies came out, and I didn't. But I was at Universal in Orlando, Florida, and I just have to say that the Nickelodeon building does not have a sweeping front lawn in it like any kid was always led to believe with the big, giant sort of globe that says Universe. They're completely placed disproportionately, and it's not. There's no big sweeping front lawn, and I was very disappointed. But other than that, I had a good time.
Cool.
Yeah. I mean, I was at Universal back in 2000, I would say, when I was on a band trip down there with school. And I haven't been back since, but I think this definitely adds an element for them that they were seriously lacking. As far as drawing people there for the holidays, I think now they have something that people are going to want to definitely go and experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think so, too. Though, they've taken the Back to the Future ride down since I've been there, which is upsetting.
It's very disturbing.
Like the Harry Potter, that whole Harry Potter area is definitely a selling point. But, like, I love Disney just because... It's magical. I mean, it just is.
Yeah, and Disney has the one up on everyone, I think.
Yeah,
just because of their name and their whole. You're not gonna have breakfast with the Terminator. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, that's the thing. Disney has all these characters, and they continue to invent them. Like Woody and Buzz, for instance. Toy Story. Nemo. All these new films come out. You get all these new dressed up characters. And Universal doesn't really have that thing because Universal's for the movie lover,
right.
And movies aren't necessarily like it's for an older sort of audience. Like, such as the Terminator 2, T2, or Battle Through Time, or whatever it is, that they have there.
Yeah, yeah.
So well, overall, Andrew brings up a good point.
What?
That well, Disney is magical overall, as opposed to Universal adding just one area of their park that is going to have a magical feel to it.
Be magical.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
But I personally enjoy entering Universal because they play the movie soundtracks. There's these long, I don't want to say escalators, but moving pavement or moving
the skywalk,
sidewalk, whatever you want to call them. Okay, if that's the Australian term, we'll go with that. skywalks. They're like, the moving pavement is what they're called. Moving.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as you're going into the park, into Universal, they play the movie themes.
Cool.
And that was just really awesome for me. So,
what do you guys think about them playing Us while people wait online?
Oh, they should. Oh, that's a great idea.
Us?
Us. Didn't someone bring that up before?
I don't know.
I think someone said that. I don't know. Either way, we'll see. That's like a great place for like all the fan sites to go and just like hand out their business cards and stuff. Because I mean, if you're going there, you must be interested in Harry Potter a little bit. So, no, we'll be kicked out for loitering. Hey, but anyway, moving on to some other news now. J.K. Rowling named Entertainer of the Year by Entertainment Weekly. Entertainment Weekly had this to say about J.K. Rowling. She is our Entertainer of the Year because she did something very, very hard, and she did it very, very well, thus pleasing hundreds of millions of children and adults very, very much. In an era of video game consoles, online multiplayer environments, and tinier is better mobisodes, minisodes, and webisodes, she got people to tote around her big, fat, old-fashioned printed-on-paper books as if they were the hottest new entertainment devices on the planet. And that is so true. I love that little connection, because I remember when the book came out, everyone was carrying them around. Like in London, I would see people carrying them around. And when we got back to the States, people were walking around with them. They were a fashion statement. And it was cool.
It was cool.
Yeah.
People had them on the train.
That was our time, man.
Yeah.
That was our time.
Yep. And I have to say, I think this is a really good reason for why she should be Times Person of the Year. We were talking about this last week. Or 2 weeks ago. She should be Times Person of the Year for this exact reason. She is an entertainer and not by the standards that we have today. I mean, I was looking back, Entertainment Weekly had a little archive of all the past entertainers of the year since like 1990, I think they started this in, or 96, or somewhere in the 90s. And all of them have been movie stars, cartoon characters. None of them have actually been a book or its author. So this is a first for Entertainment Weekly's Entertainer of the Year, and I think it says something about J.K. Rowling this past year.
Who's she up against?
For Person of the Year?
Is it Person or Entertainer of the Year?
Well, no,
who was? Well, she wasn't up against anyone. I mean, there was a list. They were all movie actors and stuff. But
right.
she won the top Entertainer of the Year.
Yeah. If you watch the video on the Today Show, they kind of go through a list of people that she was up against, and she came out pretty clear ahead of anybody else. But I agree with what you're saying, Andrew, as far as Person of the Year. I think that it's sort of the right time. If she's ever going to get it, the time is going to be now, because it's the culmination of her series.
Right.
It's all the work that she's done throughout the world with various charities. And I think it would be just the right time. I mean, when else is she going to receive it? I don't think there's any other time that it would be more suiting than right now.
Okay. Moving on to a final story of today. This was posted on Saturday. Ian McKellen finally comments on Dumbledore. Is this... I could be wrong. Is this the first time he's ever mentioned Dumbledore? Like being cast as Dumbledore?
First time I remember, yeah.
Yeah,
it's interesting, eh?
Well, here, let's set it up. Ian McKellen says, "People say to me, don't you wish you played Dumbledore? I say, no, I played Gandalf, the original." Think about that for a second.
Hold for break,
yeah. "There was a question as to whether I might take over from Richard Harris, but seeing as one of the last things he did publicly was say what a dreadful actor he thought I was, it would not have been appropriate for me to take over his part. It would have been unfair." Richard Harris actually said that?
Yeah, it's hard to
I
imagine
guess so.
He said he was a dreadful actor.
Yeah. Like, I guess unless, you know you're going to die soon anyway, so why not?
So just insult all the people you
can. Yeah, speak the truth. Well, that's surprising. I mean, the other thing that I think would upset a lot of Harry Potter fans is Ian McKellen calls Gandalf the original. What does he mean by that exactly? Is he trying to say that, like, Dumbledore is a copy off of Gandalf?
Well, surely there was Merlin before Gandalf.
Yeah. But, yeah, so he's not even the original.
I don't think you can call him the original. Well, then again, maybe he means, hang on, by the original. Get off by the original.
The original gay wizard?
Maybe.
So funny.
Nah, I don't know. But I take it with a grain. Like, I think this is interesting because it's good to hear his opinion on it, you know what I'm saying? Like, his opinion is, well, Richard Harris said he was a crap actor, sort of one of the last things he did publicly before he died.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and Ian's had a steady line of work with, I mean, the X-Men franchise and Da Vinci Code, and he's had a steady line of work, and he'll never be out of work.
You know, come to think of it, it would be weird if he played Gandalf and Dumbledore.
Yeah, I mean,
that's like the same guy playing Superman also playing Batman.
Seriously. That's a good comparison.
Yeah.
That's a really good comparison.
Well, thanks. But, you know.
It's interesting that he said it would have been unfair. How is he saying that? I mean, is he saying that in the sense that he's a better actor?
Because he outlived Richard Harris?
Oh, no.
It would have been unfair to follow him after Richard Harris already said he's a crappy actor. I guess.
But why? Because he would have proved just how much better he was?
No, I think just because that's disrespecting his wishes. I mean, not directly, but it sort of is.
Well.
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't mind that much. It's just, it's good to have an answer. Yeah. Like, I was always wondering, was there a good reason?
Just that whole icy smile part leads me to believe that he was sort of conveying the message that he was a better actor, so if he would have assumed the role, he would have put Richard Harris to shame. That's what I took out of it.
Well, yeah. I'd like to see Ian McKellen try it. But him and Michael Gambon are friends, so. And apparently they never talk about it, which isn't surprising.
Which, you know, may benefit Michael Gambon every once in a while to talk to Ian McKellen about how to play a wizard.
Yeah, I don't know.
Or how to act in general.
Yeah. That's kind of mean, Michael.
Well, yes, it is.
Sorry I pulled back on that one. I was like, I was just waiting to see if anybody else agreed. And, I'm pulling my punches in light of this whole, it's 120 episodes later, I've decided to do that, so.
I was going to ask Andy, though, because we've never heard his thoughts, what he thinks of Michael Gambon.
Well, I think he plays Dumbledore well, but my favorite's always been Richard Harris, so I don't think there's anyone who can replace him. But that's just my view anyway.
Huh.
That's what a lot of people say, I think.
If Richard Harris would have stayed on just for the third, I know he didn't have much say in the matter, but if he were available in the third one, I think we would have seen whether or not he could actually do it. I mean, a lot of people make the comment, oh, Richard Harris, I mean, look at him in Chamber of Secrets, he looks like he could blow him away, like, you know, just with the, you know, and a bit of air and wind, and he get blown away. Like, that's a lot of the, and he does look at, but he also had a sort of force behind his voice. If he were in the third one, I think we would have been able to see for sure, sort of, I think his capabilities, like, because that's where Dumbledore gets kind of, you know, really good at. I mean, you know, just a little bit of a hint, but we lost him when we did, and. Yeah. I'm not minding Michael Gambon in movie 5, but you guys haven't seen it since theaters, so.
But I reckon the thing they say about Michael Gambon is he sort of plays Dumbledore in that whole angry style, like in the fourth movie. Did you put your name in the Goblet of Fire? I mean, I preferred Richard Harris.
Right, that's what upset a lot of people.
Somebody listened to our show.
And also in Order of the Phoenix when he says, don't you all have schoolwork to do after...
Yeah, like, what was the point of that line, man?
It's just, I mean, we've talked about that a lot, though, so we'll move on. We do have a couple announcements now. Micah, you got the first one?
Yeah, we get a lot of emails for people who are interested in transcribing for the show. I know you mentioned that at the end of one of the shows a couple of weeks back. But I think I'm pretty much set as far as that's concerned for now. If anybody else... does get hired, we will let you know, but please stop sending in emails for now. And thanks to everybody who sent something in.
Thanks. Let's move on to some emails now.
Sure. The first email comes from Stephanie 15 of Lansing, Illinois, not Michigan. She said, on last week's episode, you mentioned the school in England that improved from Harry Potter. The Catholic elementary school I went to did just that, but for only the fourth grade. They started when I entered fifth grade, and what they did was divide the grade into houses, and you could earn or lose points for your house. My little sister is a proud Slytherin, and I think the whole concept is a good idea.
That could also help encourage students to have better behavior.
I agree.
You know, because if you screw up, if you bully some kid on the playground, you're going to lose points for your... assuming it's stuff outside of the classroom as well.
Yeah, it's good. And I like that idea a lot, especially because kids know Harry Potter, you know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
For instance, I taught CCD, I taught first grade religion classes with my mom. It's for all the kids in the Catholic Church who go to a public school. Mm-hmm. They get some classes, and it ends sort of eighth grade when they get confirmed in the Catholic Church. It doesn't have to end there, but it can. And... usually does for most people. And so we taught, and I used Spider-Man, actually, to teach religion. And it was quite a novel concept. I didn't, because the kids knew Spider-Man, obviously, because the first movie had come out, and, you know, they'd seen the cartoon series, etc. So what I would do is I would draw Spider-Man on the board, on the dry erase board, and every time that they were loud or noisy, I would erase part of Spider-Man. And so the... thing being that their hero, well, they would have to be good, otherwise there would be no Spider-Man.
That's a good idea.
And I did it with Harry Potter towards the end of the year as well, so that was quite good.
The next one comes from Dan, 37, of New Mexico. He said, I read a good article on the state of reading in America, and it mentions the Harry Potter books. I've always believed that kids that are already reading all over the world are buying the Harry Potter books on a huge scale. I don't believe that the books have turned many non-reading children into readers, and if this has happened, what else are they reading now that they are true readers, or are they just reading the Harry Potter books? And he goes on to list the article from the Chicago Tribune and a bunch of quotes, but I think what he's generally getting at is, are the Harry Potter books really causing children to read more? Or... are they just reading Harry Potter and then not moving on to anything else?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think it's an interesting muggle mail as well. I'm happy to read it and contemplate. I think that even if they're only reading the Harry Potter books, that's sort of 30 or 40,000 more words than they would be reading. Or you know, at least seven big more, you know, more books. Even if they're... so the question is, I guess... are they making kids read more in general or just read more Harry Potter books? But I've found that the Harry Potter books have been... that's why I like them so much, is that I can read them and can enjoy them, that they're written in such a way so as to, like... but it's true, I haven't read too terribly much beyond Harry Potter since Harry Potter, with the exception of a few Stephen King novels. So I would perhaps be in that column.
Right. And one interesting quote that came from this article that he put in his email is, he said... it's great that millions of kids are reading these long, intricate novels, but reading one such book every 18 months doesn't make up for daily reading.
Yeah, I think this is a good point. I mean, when I first read this, I was like, wow, that's actually pretty true. Because, yeah, the Harry Potter books are always being credited with getting children to read, but the question is, does it keep them reading? Like, you know, okay, they'll just read Harry Potter. Is it long-term?
Though, fair enough, I think there are plenty of fans, and we might hear from them in Muggle Mails next week, that have actually, you know, were introduced to reading. I think there are some, maybe not as large a scale as people think, and in that case, Dan is right to point this out. It feels like debunking, or just, it feels like a blow, but it's not. But I'm sure there are people that have gotten into reading and have read sort of the other fantasy novels out there. Like, for instance, Lord of the Rings. I can see how people would read Harry Potter first and then get into Lord of the Rings as opposed to the other way around, because Lord of the Rings are quite intense to read. And so if you like depends on what you like about Harry Potter. If it's Joe's writing style and that's the most that's the thing you like most, you might only read the Harry Potter books. If you like the fantasy genre as a genre, you will be highly interested in reading any or all science fiction and other fantasy books. You know what I'm saying? Like Philip Pullman, for instance. And with all these movies coming out and treatments and Northern Lights or Golden Compass, whatever it's called, coming out as well, I think Harry Potter fans, even with the completion of the series, are looking for more books to read.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it definitely inspires them to read beyond Harry Potter, but the question is, do they stick with it?
Yeah, right. And that's unpredictable. I don't think.
And I just found it interesting that they were quoting people from the Penguin Group and Simon & Schuster, all these other companies, instead of maybe asking somebody from Scholastic.
Right, so, yeah. They couldn't be reached for comment.
There's a good quote here. It says, "There are so many nuances," Whiteman said, a person named Whiteman, "reading scores don't necessarily have relevance to today's sales." I find that funny.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think what they were getting at was, do the Harry Potter books, when there's a release, are they skewing the sales in the teenage range so much that you think that there's this large group of people out there that are buying all these different books, but really it's just because of one major release?
Well, in that case, I would be pro the idea that, no, there's not enough reading out there, and we should pay more attention to books than we should to iPhones. Sorry, Andrew. iPod Touch, or look, I love iTunes. Okay, I just got you guys saw my Blick Away Phase. It's a great video game for iPods. I love it. Takes all of your songs and Guitar Heroizes them.
Yeah, I saw that. It looks pretty cool. But hey,
it all goes back to Joe.
Yeah,
and she's always said that the biggest thing that she's gotten out of all of this is that kids not only read her books but go on to read other stuff. So hopefully that is the case.
I think she would know, because they probably sent her the letters, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I think it's also impossible, not just... The other thing he's doing is, these statistics, because Chicago Tribune did them, are American. You know, so think about all the countries worldwide that are... That's the whole reason there's a Harry Potter fandom so massive, is because of all the other countries where people are reading his book, and everybody knows Harry.
I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to get a lot of emails, but I'm going to say that other countries... Putting the U.S. aside, probably generally read more than Americans do.
Oh, well, that's a good point.
Yeah.
And you're right.
But let's move on now to some more emails. Next one comes from Kevin, 21 of Chicago, Illinois. Not our Kevin. "Hey, I'm not too sure if any of you keep up with high-definition movie releases, as in Blu-ray or HD DVD, but within the past month or so, Warner Brothers has had to postpone several of their high-def releases with no explanation. This makes me think that they may be having HD production problems, so for the Harry Potter series, they wanted to allow themselves enough time to be able to meet the HD demand in the US. After all, the Harry Potter movies will likely make it into their top-selling HD releases, and releasing them day and date with a DVD will promote HD sales. This is just speculation, of course, but that's what Harry Potter podcasts are all about, right?"
What's the question?
No, it's not a question. It's a statement. Last week we talked about, why is the Harry Potter DVD being delayed? Or was it 2 weeks ago? I lose track.
It was last week.
It was
because it's out overseas, and why is it waiting until December 11th?
Okay. And you know, I did do a quick check on Amazon.com to see if Amazon.co.uk to see if they had them in stock in the UK, the HD and Blu-ray discs, and in fact they do. So that might suggest it might not be a problem with that, with the high-definition movie releases. Although I guess you would need a crapload more for us Americans, since I'm sure a hot holiday item this season is going to be the high-definition movie players.
I'm pretty sure if they wanted to produce an extra 500 million copies of the fifth movie on HD DVD a month ago, they could have done it, though.
Yeah, but there has been delays, and supply has been low. I don't know. I still seriously think it could have something to do with the Hairspray DVD release. I'm just saying, because I think it's competitive. I just think it's competitive.
No, I think it's possible. They didn't want to compete with Hairspray. They knew that they would lose.
Well, I don't know if they would lose, but if you're going out with your kid, or if a kid's going out with their parent to buy a DVD to Walmart, say, you know, typically they'll get, like, one DVD. You know, it's typical competition.
God,
it's just,
I miss Walmart.
Walmart's all right. That's where I bought
my Hairspray about DVD. Extra things being included on this DVD as opposed to maybe something on the others. Is that possible? I mean, would they include more scenes, say, from Half-Blood Prince?
Oh, well, I mean, all the scenes are viewable online. Unless, well, yeah.
Are they?
Yes. They, you put your DVD in the computer and you go to the site and you can watch them.
I haven't explored my disc too yet.
But
see,
the Christmas argument doesn't hold up with me either, though, because it's going to be Christmas in the UK also. So
yeah,
right. Well, no, but the American is consumerized. The America just wants to delay it because they know they're going to get the hype up.
Yeah,
you know?
It could be. Well,
that's
whatever.
What I think. That's what you know. But
we may never know the true reason.
But waiting an entire month to delay it?
Yeah, yes, I know. It doesn't
seem normal. Maybe it's a stupid corporate idea, but it's an idea.
I could
maybe
see like delayed for Australia or Germany or
every.
Well,
DVD
New
we
Zealand
ever get
itself
delayed,
runs out of iPods.
Really?
Literally. Hmm. Yeah. Hmm. You can actually go into a store and say, "I want an iPod," and they'll say. It's capable that they're out of them in the country.
Yeah. Well, there's some business strategy to this. We just don't know what it is.
Right. Right.
We have contacts, don't we? Can't we email them and be
yeah,
like,
"Yeah, we could." I keep forgetting. I don't think they'll give a comment. They'll just be like, "Cause I don't know, I'll see. I'll look into it." All right. That's all we have for emails this week. Because we have a segment we are bringing back this week. I think the last segment, chapter by chapter segment, was episode 44, it looks like, back in mid-June.
That's one third, that's two thirds of the show ago. So that was the first third of the show. So by the first third of what the show is now, chapter by chapter was gone, out of the scene, zip, out, patooey. Why was that, Andrew?
Well, we had mixed feedback about Chapter by Chapter originally, and, well, I mean, throughout its run. Some people really loved it, some people didn't like it so much, so we took a break from it for a while, and then Book 7 came around, and we sort of just scrapped it all together. The original plan, and I think I remember sitting with you on the phone about this, Eric, was we were going to start a certain day, and we were going to be able to complete every chapter between Books 1 and 6, right before, leading up to the Book 7 release. Was that,
I think I'm
kind of
glad
plan?
We didn't.
Yeah, I'm glad we didn't either, because...
It was difficult with, especially with the movie being released in conjunction, it was just, you know, we had so many... I think we did quite well on content. Yeah.
Yeah, we did do well.
I think we did quite well on content, and there were mixed reviews on chapter by chapter, and it was for a very good reason. So what we've decided to do, this was what Andrew's idea, because, well, explain about Book 7.
It wasn't even my idea. I mean, we've been talking about this for a while, but, and then it's going to sound like I'm trying to blame it on someone, but Micah suggested last week, or a couple weeks ago, we've been thinking about bringing it back, okay? So shoot me. Fine. Call my idea, whatever, I don't care. But we are going to bring it back this week. We're going to go through Deathly Hallows. We're going to start with Chapter 1 this week. But we're going to tweak the segment a little bit. We're going to treat it differently. And we're going to take our first shot at it with today's show. And we think it's going to go pretty well. I do. Micah does. Yeah, he does.
I do too. So for this for this new revamp, so now for new listeners or people who who are not terribly familiar with it, we'll just do a recap.
We do have a lot of new listeners since then, so
We go by what the original, I think one of the original ideas was, between, it was Jamie and myself were talking about it once, and we said, well, wouldn't it be great if we, no, this wasn't Jamie's idea, wouldn't it be great if we had a read with sort of all of our listeners, where we read a chapter, and they read a chapter, and each week we talked about it on the show. It would be sort of endless content, almost, with, you know, one for each chapter of the Harry Potter books would last forever. It's the podcaster's ideal just thing, even if not for a main discussion, it could provide. And it was an interesting idea. In concept, it was a bit interesting, and basically what remained was that the MuggleCasters did read a chapter of the first book, until we did end up completing the first book.
We did.
What we do, yeah, is we read each chapter of the Harry Potter series, and we bring up some key points, discussion topics, and we talk about what happens in the books. Now, with Book 7, this will be interesting and different because it'll be a very nice way of sort of. I mean, we've done overviews of Book 7 ever since the past 20 episodes or so. We've talked about what happened at Book 7, but never at this detail and never with a complete sort of. Well, what was it actually? What actually happened? Yeah. You guys agree?
Yeah, and I think a lot of new people have asked for this. They want us to go through Book 7. Chapter by chapter, and so that's really why it's coming back, because people want it.
Yes,
and it is our segment.
And admittedly, we have sort of we've sort of gone away from in-depth discussion that we used to do. We haven't been doing it as much lately. I mean, we've been talking about gay characters and hairspray and
what
Harry Potter
true.
Conferences are bugging us. So
yeah, We have to show them that we still got it, and we're not just arrogant, pompous teenage boys, and
gay
rightfully
boys.
So, we're gay teenage boys who like hairspray and are really happy that. Anyway, okay.
Let's go to the actual segment. Let's do this.
Okay, so before we begin, I wanted to preface this chapter by chapter. Shortly. No, you guys are thinking great. No. Some listeners may or may not know. I mean, I haven't been on too many episodes, not as many as I used to be recently, but some listeners may very well know that I didn't have the fondest, warmest reception to Book 7 initially. I have a vow that I will reread this book with a keen eye, and I will be absolutely I won't go easy on it, but I'm going to completely re-envision what I think, because we're going by chapter. All the MuggleCasters are doing this I don't know about every show, but we'll be doing this throughout all of Book 7, and I won't be biased.
Okay.
We're going to do it.
Sweet.
I'm really enthused.
So let's get right into it. We're going to start with The Dark Lord Ascending, Chapter 1.
Everybody, okay, books open.
Yeah, everyone
I believe
open
this
their
is,
books to
yeah.
page 1.
What page is it in
page
the U.S.?
One. It's page 1.
It opens on page 10 or 9, actually, in the UK edition.
Yeah, 9.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
We're going to start with a basic summary. In short, it's Voldemort and all of his Death Eaters around one table listening to Voldemort's plan to kill Harry Potter. He's telling his friends, our foes, that he is going to kill Harry Potter himself because he's made too many mistakes. So that's basically how it opens up, and our initial thoughts on this chapter,
We'll go around the table. Go around the table.
Let me just start by saying I think this is the perfect way to open a book. It's very movie-like. It's a very movie-like opening because it's very short, and we find out exactly what the villain in this, I'm just going to call it a film right now, film is going to be trying to do throughout the entire film, and a short
you can
and
say
sweet
text,
and it ends with a death. It's so fitting. It's going to be a perfect movie opening. Next,
I agree, Micah. What do you think?
I agree completely. Actually, Andrew and I were talking about this before we started the show, and saying how awesome of a way this is to open up Deathly Hallows, you know, the Avada Kedavra, the flash of green light, and then Voldemort saying, you know, the whole line of dinner and a guinea, and then you can just see it transferring over to Hedwig's theme, and that's how the seventh movie opens up.
Hopefully they keep it in.
Yeah, if they're listening now, yeah, you better keep that in.
David, my
well,
man.
I don't think they'll have a problem, though, with this book, because this is short. This is a short book. In the UK edition, isn't it the third longest book, I think? It's behind...
Something like that.
Yeah. It's behind 5, for sure.
But,
and I think
but
it's
you can
behind
see the movie opening like that. Similar, really, to how Goblet of Fire opened up with Frank Bryce being killed.
Yeah. It's very, very similar. And also a bit... You get a lot of star power with all the actors. You'll see Alan Rickman and Jason Isaacs and all of them. And Ralph Fiennes right in the very beginning. And it's a great... You're right. It's very movie-esque and very good for the narrative of the text.
Have we seen Alan Rickman and Ralph Fiennes on the same...
Have they been together?
Seen together yet? I don't think so, have we?
No, not together, because that would be... Yeah. No, we haven't.
Yeah, that would be very cool.
And Snape wasn't at the end of movie 5, as far as I recall.
Nope.
Yep. I can't wait.
Andy?
Andy.
All right, well, I should probably preface this by saying Book 7 was my favorite book, so That's oh. good. But I think this was a very good chapter, and the thing I really enjoyed about it was something that I've been wanting to see for a long time, which is the Malfoy Manor. And then we get taken yep. right into it, so I thought yep. that was fantastic.
Guys, we're at the Malfoy Manor.
Yeah, it's about time.
Isn't that awesome? After six books, that's actually our first point here. After six books of knowing the Malfoys, disliking the Malfoy, well, I don't know, some people thought, Draco was kind of cute. But, we're at the Malfoy Manor. Arthur Weasley has been here. Characters have been here. This is where Dobby was from, we're talking. And we meet it. And guys, what do we see? What do we see? What do we see? What do we have floating
Voldemort
around?
Voldemort is there!
Voldemort's there! And, guys, we have... They're white. They're sleek. They're shiny. They're peacocks.
What?
The Malfoy Manor has peacocks. Did you guys not find... I find this... I put this as number one in our key points here. Isn't that awesome? What else about the manor do you guys find interesting that we're introduced to in this book?
Well, I like how Joe describes it as a handsome manor.
Yeah, it's very handsome.
Out of the darkness at the end of the straight drive. It's glinting. And of course, we've talked about it a million times before, but Joe's just very descriptive with all of her scenes.
No, it's really written well. I think that's very demonstrated. And you guys remember in the middle of their talks, they you hear a whine, a moan, a distinct sort of noise, and Voldemort turns to Wormtail and says, I thought you were keeping our prisoner in line?
Yeah, now, wait a second. What was that?
It was Ollivander, yeah.
Oh, okay.
From underneath, but we don't know that
makes
yet.
Makes sense now.
So, okay. We just spoiled it for all the people who haven't read Book 7 and were waiting for us to do chapter by chapter on it. Never mind.
Well, because I was confused because I thought the Hogwarts teacher was the prisoner, so I was like, why is he running off if the Hogwarts teachers are right there?
Right. Yeah, it was a bit confusing. So, when they go into the room, now this is, we meet, what, Snape and Yaxley, right?
Yes.
Snape and the Death Eater Yaxley, who are, they have their wands out at each other, they draw their, and this line worried me, because I think this was released, sort of just prior to, like, the week of the seventh book, wasn't it? This first, apparent opening had been leaked?
Yeah, it did.
And just the way Snape says, when asked, you have news, Snape says, the best, replied Snape. That worried me very, very much, because this is just after. You have to take yourself back. This is the night of or the night after, or, well, actually quite a bit after, but it's just after Snape has killed Dumbledore. And I took it to mean, oh no, maybe we were all fool for thinking Snape is good because he says, well, that's the best, and he's grinning, and he's like, I have the best news of all. I thought he was delivering the news that he had killed Dumbledore, but he wasn't, so that's good.
Yeah. So then we get into the house, and there's that floating human figure, and then Joe intros Draco, but doesn't directly say that it's Draco. And what page is this on?
She says, a boy with sleek hair was the only one paying attention to Charity Burbage.
Now, I don't know about you guys, but I knew right away that was Draco. Who else could it be?
I read it twice, and then I figured it was him.
Really?
Yeah, because it was like, boy with
sleek
hair. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that he should be in the Death Eater meeting. Not, I mean, I realize at the end of Book 6, we realize he's been inducted as a Death Eater, but
yeah.
I think it's something quite interesting to have the whole family there, which we'll get into in a moment.
Yes, the whole family thing and how Voldemort responds. Draco, you can tell at this point that Draco is still exactly how he has been. He's weak. He shouldn't be a Death Eater. He's scared at the sight of Charity Burbage. Is that how you pronounce the name?
Yep. Her name.
He's scared of her floating right there, right in front of him.
Kind
of creepy.
Draco's
a wuss. He's not.
Well, I think he's realizing that. I think he's realizing at this point more than ever he's in over his head. Or at least Charity's over his head. But he's in over his head, and he can't get out. There's no way out. So he just has to sit there and look glum, and hope he doesn't get noticed by Voldemort, as he does.
Right. So then they start talking about the Ministry of Magic.
Yes. Their plan is to overthrow.
Oh, God.
What's up?
No, I just wanted to bring up one thing that I thought, and it does relate to all of this, but when they first start getting into talking about the plan and the news that Snape brought, how Snape can sort of conveys that information to Voldemort, and how Snape is so very sure about when Harry is being moved. And I'm just going to quote it right here because, you know, this goes back to the whole idea of Voldemort being able to read into Snape's mind and Snape being so good at locking him out. It says, his red eyes fastened upon Snape's black ones with such intensity that some of the watchers looked away, apparently fearful that they themselves would be scorched by the ferocity of the gaze. Snape, however, looked calmly back into Voldemort's face, and after a moment or two, Voldemort's lipless mouth curved into something like a smile. So, it's clear that Snape has to be extremely powerful to do what he's doing, and it shows even in the first chapter of Book 7.
Yeah.
Again, yeah, the Snape thing. No, you're right. You're completely right. And Snape, where is Snape? Snape is seated at the right hand of Voldemort. Literally, the chair right beside him. Severus, I was saving this for you. As soon as he walks in, he sits at the right hand of Voldemort, which is significant.
He said it like that?
He said it exactly like that.
Oh, yeah. Severus, come here.
It is high. What you didn't know about it. Now, look, if he's the next one to come out, I'm leaving. I'm leaving. I'm leaving. You'll hear a door close.
Oh, he was in love with Lily. We know that.
Yeah. No, I'm talking Voldemort.
Oh.
He wasn't in love with
anybody.
Anyway,
yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's not capable of love, so I'll continue believing that. No, the right hand of Voldemort, that's symbolic. So Snape is so trusted and so powerful, he sits at the right hand of Voldemort. And Voldemort's got that snake all around him, so that's pretty creepy. Because the snake would be, you know, as described as being as big as a man's thigh.
Yeah, and the snake just straight up will kill you.
And it does, in the end. Oh, yes. Spoiler again. But, I mean, Snape, and Voldy, right there. That's just, ugh. This is like a bad board meeting gone wrong.
Yeah.
And they're talking about hostile takeovers.
Yeah. So Voldemort is saying that he needs to kill off Harry Potter himself, and thanks to Snape's information, he realizes that Harry's not going to go through Portkey or Flu Powder, so he's going to catch him right out in person. He's going to catch him out in broad darkness or daylight. He's going to catch him. And it's not going to be through magic because the Ministry of Magic could be watching. Or, well, they know that the Ministry could be watching. Or the Death Eaters.
Exactly. Now, there's a quote here.
Okay.
Quote here is, "I shall attend to the boy in person. There have been too many mistakes where Harry Potter is concerned. Some of them have been my own. That Potter lives is due more to my errors than to his triumphs." Lord Voldemort says this. On page 13 in the UK edition, he says that there have been errors, and they've been more Voldemort's fault than they have been due to Harry's, dumb luck, basically. Voldemort now goes on to say more
page
about
page 6
this.
In our US edition.
Page 6, that's really interesting, yeah. But yeah, he says that, and then he goes on to it. So this is sort of setting up that Voldemort is aware of his past failings and is really keen on not making any more mistakes when it comes to Harry Potter.
I thought that statement was so ironic, though, if you think
about
it.
It's very ironic.
Because there he is talking about his mistakes, and yet he's
unaware
oblivious to the fact of how many more mistakes he's made and how far along in the process Harry already is.
Yeah, by the end of this book, he's going to make a boatload more mistakes.
So then, I mean, the next point, the Ministry of Magic. There's obviously some problems here.
They've confounded... Yeah, no, that's Dawlish, who is susceptible to Confundus charms. They've infiltrated the Ministry people. The Death Eaters have placed their people, and a single mismove will cost Voldemort several weeks if they act too soon on Scrimgeour. But they've infiltrated the Ministry. This sets up the rest of the book. One of the premises.
Now, then comes a little scene with the Malfoys. And Voldemort's looking for a wand. He needs a wand. and he decides that Lucius's wand would be the wand that he needs. So Lucius is a little reluctant at first. He can't believe it. And when Voldemort takes the wand, Lucius is expecting to receive Voldemort's, and that gets a laugh out of Voldemort. Voldemort LOLs, and he's like, yeah, you're not getting my wand, sorry. And then Voldemort's like, oh, well, you best be appreciative of me being here. Aren't you not? Are you not? And it takes Bellatrix to reassure Voldemort that they love having them there. It's the highest honor, says Bellatrix.
There can be no greater pleasure.
And Voldemort gets all sappy. He's like, oh, that means so much from you.
No, that's not sappy.
And then rips her apart.
He rips her apart. He's saying, oh, that means so much coming from you.
Whose niece is banging a werewolf.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but
I thought
that sort of meant he was serious, but I thought the whole Lupin thing was a separate
story. No, he killed Sirius. Death by curtain.
Yeah, one point that I just want to bring up, and sorry to backpedal here, but it's about the whole ministry infiltration thing. This is actually the first time in six and a bit books that really the thought ever crossed my mind that, wow, the good guys might not win, you know? Which I thought was interesting.
I mean, because once the government is infiltrated, you know,
yeah, there's no
in trouble.
It's just absolutely, and knowing that Voldemort's a half-blood and listening to him talk about this purity thing, you get the hypocrisy of it all. I think Joe does convey that quite a bit, because this is very personal. This is, well, not very personal, but this is very dangerous. A meeting of, you know, the villain of the series at the very beginning of the book, talking about purging the world.
Yeah.
And that right. is why they kill Charity Burbage. The Muggle Studies professor, for polluting the minds of pure blood, namely wizards, to say that, well, Muggles and wizards should get along.
What do you think? It, on the ministry side of it, though, back to what Andy was saying also, is that it's interesting how Snape sort of plants the seed in Voldemort's mind that the Order has no trust in the ministry. And I just found that also kind of ironic, because the Order has never really had much trust in the ministry, even from Book 5 on.
Right.
So true, yeah.
I just found that interesting that Snape would sort of throw that out there, and Voldemort's response was pretty much, oh, all the better. You know, he's going to have to move in the open anyway now, since they don't trust the ministry. And
totally.
I just thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, the ministry's
playing that card.
The ministry's proved a number of times that they can be pretty incompetent, so I mean, it's understandable that the Order doesn't trust them.
Oh yeah, no, but they would have to. It's also said that they want to protect the house with the best spells that both the Ministry and the Order can think up. So they do accept the help, sort of, in when they can trust them, or when they can, you know, use the sort of brute force of the numbers, the sheer numbers and governmental support from the Ministry, you know. But they don't trust them.
So then Charity has to take one for the team and has to be killed, while Snape just looks on and acts like, you know, sorry, nothing I can do about it. I'm gonna blow my cover. And then that concludes chapter one. It's a short chapter, and like we said, it's gonna be a great movie opening. Here's hoping that they actually keep everything in. I mean, that whole chapter-by-chapter segment went by pretty quick. Is there anything else you guys want to add about it?
I had a few things.
Oh,
sorry.
Okay.
I don't mean to extend
it. Hey, God forbid
out.
we plan it beforehand, put it in our show planner.
Sorry.
What do you have to add?
No, I was just going to bring up the killing scene, something very interesting. If you go back and you notice what Charity says, take a look.
Yeah.
It's a very common line that has been used throughout the course
Severus,
of the series.
Severus, please, please.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's the same thing that Narcissa says to Snape in Spinner's End. It's also the same thing that Dumbledore says to Severus before he dies.
Yeah.
Oh, Severus, please. At the will of Severus. At the mercy, rather. At the mercy of...
But, you know...
Yeah.
It's like
she's highlighted Snape.
Here's my thing, though. Well, I guess she's desperate. She has to plead with him. But does even if Snape was like willing to be the good guy in that situation, Voldemort would have just killed him. So like, Charity was screwed. She should have known that. But then again, I guess you just have to, you know, do whatever you can.
Well, I think it makes Snape look better anyway. That she's like pleading to him. She trusts him as a friend, which just shows how good of, you know, a good guy he played. You know, the part of that people are turning to him for help, and he offers none. And then she dies. Voldemort likes that. Voldemort likes killing her when she's tortured, and her one, you know, supposed ally is just, you know, completely impassive and doesn't do a thing. You know, doesn't even look at her. That's what he wants to be, for his victims to be alone and friendless at the time of their death, just like he will be.
Yeah. I mean, another thing I picked up on, which is unrelated to this, was when Voldemort was talking to Bellatrix and to her about pruning her tree, as far as the Black Family tree was concerned, and she's
and
the one that ends up killing.
And he's not talking about horticulture. Voldemort is not a horticulturalist, as far as we know.
Well, there's plenty of other ways you could go with that too, but I'm not going to get into that.
Hey, let's not.
My point was that she's talking about killing Tonks very early on, and we all know that's what ends up happening.
And that's interesting that we mentioned Remus Lupin, because isn't Lupin... Now, when I read this, I was concerned because Voldemort... It's of Voldemort's attention that Remus Lupin, the half-breed werewolf, has married Nymphadora Tonks. Now, I don't know how secret the Order thought they should have kept it, but they clearly... I mean, if Voldemort knows that Remus Lupin is not a good werewolf, why would Voldemort... I was worried for Lupin, basically, in this book, because if he's still doing undercover things with the werewolves, trying to fit in, Voldemort could stop that with a single word. He could just tell them that Remus is not, no matter what, a good werewolf on the bad side to be swayed, and he should be killed, and they would kill him the next time they saw him. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But he was spending time with Tonks at home, so I don't think he was any more within the werewolves like he was in the book six. So I don't think his assignment continued, I guess. So, any other points or favorite lines from the series?
That was another part of chapter by chapter we're going to start doing now. But, I mean, we did go through the one, "I shall attend to the boy in person." I think we also mentioned "Dinner in Nagini" is also a great one. Great movie closer for Hedwig's theme, "The Fade In." As Nagini's slithering
down. It'd be really
down.
Twisted. Wouldn't it be really twisted? Having this thing like, wow, 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 wow,
it's like a remix. I hope that they include the line, "Draco fell out of his, onto the floor, his chair, onto the floor." I have a hard time actually picturing Draco just straight up fall out of his chair onto the floor despite seeing.
Well, you
got to
realize
drop.
it's a human body. It weighs at least 150 or 130, something like that.
But
at
the
least.
Body didn't push him over.
Well, no, but it's a resounding crack on a... I mean, I assume it's a mahogany table, so maybe it didn't make that large of a crack. But that's pretty creepy. A whole body just falling right in front of you, like, literally, like, that's not...
Yeah, I guess.
There was one other thing that I was wondering about in this chapter.
What's up?
And it's actually a character who's never given any sort of identification. And at the beginning, I thought it was Slughorn, but I guess in the end it turned out not to be. But it's on page 4 in this chapter, in the American edition, and they talk about a squat man sitting a short distance from Yaxley, and they say he gave a wheezy giggle, and that just kind of reminded me of Slughorn. And it was just that he was never identified as a specific character. I mean, I'm sure he could be some random Death Eater, but...
Hang on, what's the quote? Find some quotes right around it, if you can.
I said, he's a... it says, "The Order's got one thing right then, eh?" Referring to the fact that they had infiltrated the Ministry.
You don't think it was Pettigrew?
No.
Nah, he wouldn't speak
I guess
like
it could have been.
Like, I thought it was, too.
It could be. It may be. He gave a wheezy giggle that was echoed here and there along the table.
I thought it was one of the... Caros, Amicus or Electo.
Yeah, it is kind of strange, though, that Joe wouldn't even go on to mention him, whoever this him was. But, I mean, because then she does bring up Wormtail.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is page 12 in the UK edition.
See, the other thing about the segment is that we sort of think out loud, and we get through, you know.
My quote was just this really brilliant line about Bellatrix. After Bellatrix assures Voldemort that there is no greater pleasure than his presence in their family's home, after she says it, there's actually a line. Joe Rowling writes, "Where Narcissa sat rigid and impassive, Bellatrix leaned towards Voldemort, for mere words could not demonstrate her longing for closeness." That is a brilliant character line for Bellatrix.
Does she not get any from her husband or something? I mean,
Bellatrix does. Oh, well, I don't know.
She's married.
Is that an actual question? Does Bellatrix get any?
Well, I mean, look at the quote.
Well, no. Yeah, it's true.
Get
Vermeer words cannot
some
demonstrate
Viagra or something.
Her longing for closeness. Maybe there's no magical solution yet. What would the Latin be? Think about it. Erectus? What, you know, what?
I guess.
Magna. No, Erectus Maxima. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know, man.
Engorgio, maybe.
Engorgio. No. Micah, that serves a different purpose. Jesus.
What purpose is that?
To make it bigger. Not harder.
Okay,
bigger.
Well, this concludes chapter by chapter for this week. Hopefully everyone enjoyed it. And we want to encourage everyone to send in their feedback about Chapter 1 and things that we discussed. And we'll get to them next week in the listener rebuttals.
As well as style. Style, too. If you have any ideas about what we should kind of do to tweak it and to change it, see if we do. Because we did what? We did summary, key points, and favorite lines.
Yeah, no,
we'll follow an outline better.
Yeah, we'll follow an outline. Michael will actually include his stuff. Well, the idea was to pick like the top 5 plot points and then just discuss those instead of just going all over the place, because that way we can just focus on the big stuff. And maybe we can include a little part, something called like a little thing or the little things. But I don't know. This is hard to get right.
I think it was accurate, and it was easy to pull 5 things from this chapter and talk about them.
Okay,
it's such a short chapter. So
next week we will be discussing Chapter 2, In Memoriam. This is a good chapter because it comes with Rita Skeeter's article about Albus Dumbledore, and that was a good read. That was a good
intro,
read.
Yeah.
So let's get to that next week. Read it beforehand, everyone, and then you can all follow along as we discuss it. It's sort of fun and interactive.
Absolutely.
This week, Chapter 2. Isn't it great holding the, like, I get real pleasure out of just holding this book. Like, it's in pristine condition. Like, just the shape and the, it's just a beautiful, like work of art.
I have the one that you guys all signed, so aww, I'm really happy about that.
That's cute.
I didn't sign it.
Well, Micah, you should have come to London. There.
You said you all. I don't think Andy signed it. Did you, Andy?
Eric
okay,
actually signed.
Andrew, I have the copy that you signed.
My Half-Blood Prince book, anyway.
Yeah, man, that's awesome.
Hey, let's move on to. I didn't have a email of the week, but I actually just got this Facebook message, and I feel like I have to read it. It's time for my Facebook message of the week. I'm going to leave this person nameless because that would just be embarrassing. The message says, "First, I just want to say your podcast is still great. I had my doubts when the final book came out that you could keep it going with good material, and I'm happy to see that you guys are still number one in my book. When I'm bored in class, hungover, etc., I pop in my headphones and listen to you guys discuss everything about Harry. It's the best way to get through my day. But to get to my question, I'm going to be in New Jersey next weekend, and I'll be carrying Killer Bud. And judging by your profile picture, you might have at least tried the Wacky Tabacky. I would just be honored to give a nice free sample, as much as you want, to my favorite talk show host and actually meet you. I just want to apologize now if you don't smoke, my bad. But if you do, hey, free bud. Get back to me. Oh, and hope you had a great, happy Thanksgiving. Peace, the name of the person."
Wow.
Please give me a call, and we'll discuss where to meet.
Where to drop the shipment of Wacky Tobacky?
No, it was supposed to be a joke. You were all supposed to laugh because I don't smoke. No, seriously. I just thought it was funny because I don't smoke.
Well, good on you. In the meantime, you can forward them to. No, I'm not in the States.
That's a nice offer, though. I like what listeners offer, free stuff, even if it's something I'm not interested in.
I think it's a bizarre insight into the kind of illegal things that rock stars like us can get into. Pretty
but
easy.
Choose not to, kids.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, well, yeah, thanks to him. We'll wrap things up today with a chicken soup for the MuggleCaster's soul.
Today's chicken soup comes from Amy, age 21, of Portland, Oregon. I'm pretty sure you do not hear often enough that without you, someone couldn't have gotten through all the brain slicing they had to do. I put on old episodes on one of the computers in our lab while I made endless number of slices of rat brain for the last month for cell counts for my research. If we come up with ways to preserve brain function after injury, everyone gets to thank Harry Potter. So obviously she wasn't doing it for fun, but you guys are great. Thanks for helping me get through my thesis, Amy.
That's so gross.
A sliced up rat brain. Now, you're trying to maintain brain function, now, if I can get this correctly, after injury, but I don't know that it should be after injury. It should be after you cut the brain up into 15 pieces and put it on slides, right? Because that's a bit strange.
I think that wraps up today's show. It's a good show.
Yeah.
I like the show.
It was a good show.
Quick thing about the Wall of Fame. I actually haven't checked the email submissions yet for that, but we'll work on that soon, get a complete Wall of Fame, probably have some results next week. Let's give you all of our contact information. If you'd like to send us some parcel mail, you can mail that to MuggleCast P.O. Box 3151, Cumming, Georgia 30028. You can also call the MuggleCast hotline with your questions or comments. Just remember to keep your question under 60 seconds and eliminate as much background noise as possible. The numbers are, in the United States, 1-218-20-MAGIC. If you're in the United Kingdom, you can dial 020-8144-0677. And if you're in Australia, you can dial 02-8003-5668. You can also Skype the username MuggleCast. And you can also use the handy feedback form on MuggleCast.com to contact any one of us. And you can contact Andy at webmaster@harrypotterfanzone.com.
Yep, if you're so inclined to do so.
Yes.
Because Andy's awesome.
You can also visit MuggleCast.com for community outlets such as our MySpace, Facebook, YouTube, Frapper, Last.fm, and the fan listing. Also, dig the show at dig.com. Please vote for us once a month at Podcast Alley. And you can also rate and review us on Yahoo Podcasts and, of course, iTunes. Please leave your iTunes reviews because we've gotten a couple bad ones lately. We need to cover them up with the good ones. So, also, we have the subscribe link now for those of you who own a Zune. And, of course, you can subscribe through iTunes. One quick thing about iTunes, please. People always say when I put the show up, it's not showing up in iTunes yet. Yes, it is. It's not just showing up. It's just not showing up in the directory yet. If you hit subscribe, then click on podcasts on your iTunes. You click on podcasts on the left. Then you hit refresh. It'll look at your podcasts, and it'll see that there's a new episode of MuggleCast out, and it'll download it automatically. You don't have to wait for it to show up, the new episode to show up in the store. Just click on the podcast tab on the left side of iTunes, hit refresh, it'll get MuggleCast. That's if you're subscribed. So,
if you have an iPhone, do you just have to push the screen a few times to get a new podcast?
No, you can't download. There is the Wi-Fi iTunes store, but you can't download podcasts yet, which is kind of strange.
No kidding.
Yeah, there is some illegal software for the iPhone that lets you download podcasts and listen to them right on your phone without using a computer, but it's not as good as iTunes, so
it's not yet legal yet.
Yeah, it will.
Well,
be
guys,
soon,
that was good.
That was a show. That was a show.
I was just gonna say though, also just a reminder for people to send in stuff for Chapter 2, so we can respond to it right away on the
show.
Oh
yeah, yeah. No, totally. That's a great idea. Go and read Chapter 2 and see what you think. Should we get a? Should we say specific topic or subject of the email when they send it?
No, I mean just. Yeah, that's probably a good idea. Just chapter by chapter, maybe.
We'll put chapter by chapter hyphen chapter 2, or chapter by chapter hyphen chapter 1.
Yeah, / page 5 and enter page paragraph number, quote.
Well, I don't
number,
know if you have to do all that.
And
I'm
just
talking
be sure
about
to check it twice, because if it's incorrect, we will be reading it aloud on, and you'll look stupid. No, I'm joking. That's good. And guys, what was I going to say? I don't know. Forget it. Oh yeah, send in your Christmas cards too. We'd love to.
Yeah.
It's about that time of the year where we get Christmas cards to the P.O. box. And they will, I think, all be forwarded. Laura's mother will be rushing around to get us all our Christmas cards on time, so send some more in. Thanks to Laura's mom for doing that.
I'm looking forward to the Christmas episodes. They're always fun ones. And the New Year's one. They're always good.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
So.
Didn't we synced it up. only last year.
Yes.
Very nice.
Real quick, before we wrap up the show today, I just want to say I also talked to Jamie a little bit ago, and he said he may be able to come on next week for next week's show. So maybe he'll be back a little earlier than we thought. So that's all good news for all you Jamie fan dorks. I mean girls. Or boys.
Yeah. Well, I...
Goats.
So,
I may or
goats.
Not be here because of my trip to the South Island. I may or may not be able to... I'll definitely see how chapter by chapter turns out without me. So that'd be great.
Okay, well, thank you everyone for listening. Once again, I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Eric Skull.
I'm Micah Tannenbaum.
And I'm Andy McCray.
Once again, Andy's from HarryPotterFanZone.com. Thanks for joining us, Andy.
It's all right, no problem.
And we'll see everyone next week for episode 122. Bye-bye.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye.